You're the unhappy youngster who tends the shop while the boss is away, and you've suddenly found yourself with a nasty mess on your hands and no policy to guide you. But it doesn't matter, Cart. Truly, it doesn't. Shall I prophesy for you?
Zeb, if you can tell me anything that will let me stop hating myself, please speak.
Very well. A little background first. There is no extradition treaty between Helium and Earth. Earth 10, I mean, that embassy that sent you that scroll of lies.
I don't know. That's one thing that has my hands tied.
There is no such treaty, but I'm not asking you to remove that tripled guard. Had there been such a treaty, your father, or Tardos Mors, or both, more likely both, would never have left you unaware of its existence. So it's a bluff, just as their evidence is fake. But it doesn't matter, because you will make no objection to our leaving on schedule. Prophecy.
But I can't let you leave yet. You know why.
Prophecy, I said. Authentic prophecy. You will have compelling reasons to change your mind. You'll do it, and Deja Thoris, the Jadara, I mean, not my Deja Thoris, Didi, the Jadara will back you up. But even without the authority of your mother, you would still change your mind, because no matter what I have done, and I have committed no crimes here or on Earth Zero or on Earth 10 where I have never been, and no matter what lies they tell about me, and no matter how helpless you feel in the absence of your father and your maternal grandfather and great-grandfather, you don't have it in you to condemn Hilda and Didi to death.
What?
To find the English word obstetrics.
It's not a word I know.
How about eclampsia? Fallopian pregnancy?
I don't know any of those words. Should I?
You don't know them for the same reason you didn't know the word extradition. Because your father never expected you to need to know such words. It's possible that the Jadara or the Princess Thuvia knows one or more of them. Babies are very interesting to women, and your father may have told your mother something about the differences between the way your women have babies and the way our women do.
Well, I do know that much. Our women lay eggs, yours have live birth. There is one life form on Barsoom that does that. But what's the difference? Laying eggs requires tending an incubator for a rather long time. Possibly it is better to incubate the egg inside, where there is no worry about always keeping the right temperature.
Cart, it's roughly the difference between being annoyed by a hangnail and being clawed by a wild banth. Obstetrics is the name of a highly difficult specialty practiced by learned physicians to make the extremely dangerous process of live birth less dangerous. Did you know that both Didi and Hilda are pregnant? Have fertilized eggs inside them, I mean. You may not know the usual word. I think they told Princess Thuvia. She may not have told you.
Thuvia did tell me. She said they were both happy about it.
Yes, Cart, they are. Hilda and Didi are brave. But if you want to have innocent blood on your hands and the deaths of two women on your conscience, women at whose feet you placed your sword, go ahead with your plans to keep us here against our will. The prince chewed his lip and looked agonized.
Zeb, are you still my blood brother?
Now and forever, Cart. My sword was at your feet. Shall I place it there again?
It is at my feet, and mine is at yours. I think I must abdicate to my mother. But first I will remove that guard around your space chariot. I will seek out my mother tomorrow morning when she is ready to receive people. But I will remove the guard now.
Cart, you're telling me to take Gay Deceiver and escape, while you turn your back. I see that you remember that I told you that I could pilot out of the courtyard garden without help. Yes, I can, but I am still prophesying. You will leave that guard where it is. You will not abdicate. You will not close your eyes to something that would blemish your honor. I will not enter that courtyard garden like a thief in the night. Instead, Tomorrow we will all have a farewell picnic, all of us. These be firm prophecies.
A picnic?
Certainly. Friends often say farewell with a party, do they not? But I want this one outdoors at a particular spot because I have something to do there. Two things besides the farewell picnic. Thuvia helped Dee Dee and Hilda to choose good timepieces for Tom Takis and Catch Catch Can. Then Thuv insisted on lending them her credit by writing a draft in payment. But Dee Dee and Hilda are both proud, conscientious, and insisted on Thuvia keeping the timepieces until they could redeem her draft. We brought a supply of gold to Barsoom with us. But, not knowing what we would run into, I left it in the Bay of Blood.
The Bay of Blood? Why didn't you tell me earlier? I would have sent you out in a flyer with an armed escort. That gold may be gone now. Issus!
It will be there, when we go for it, tomorrow. I hid it most carefully and know exactly how to find it. Cart, quit worrying. I prophesy that all will be happy. Tomorrow will be a jolly picnic. The next day we will be gone. But I need your help with tomorrow's picnic. I want all our friends there, you, Thuvia, your gracious mother. Yes, and by all means, Mobius Tauras. Jake would be disappointed if Mobius were not there. Will you offer me the use of a flyer big enough for all our party? More than the number I mentioned, because, if I may, I think it would be a gracious gesture for us to take along Tira and her eight pixies. They can serve the picnic. They wouldn't be happy not serving, and they will picnic too. Cart, how can I arrange catering for a large picnic?
Catering? Another word I do not know.
The wine, the food, including food for our two green giant friends. And how early must they start to arrive at a reasonable hour when they aren't hampered by passengers, as they were when they picked us up there? A sentimental reason for making it the Bay of Blood, too. It was where we met our giant friends.
Their thoats are very fast. Just tell them when to meet you and where. But this catering thing, this is your home. The palace kitchens will provide everything.
Cart, I want to give this party, not have it given to me.
You will be giving it. Tell Tira what you require. I have spoken.
I shrugged. You have me blocked in. I can't possibly work out how to cater it outside the palace without your help. Is it permitted to make presents of money to slaves? Indentured servants? Or does that touch honor too?
Quite proper, even expected. Not lavish, please.
Would small gold coins from Earth, Earth Zero, be acceptable?
Yes, but they will keep such coins as keepsakes, not change them into tanpi. Now I'm prophesying.
It takes a brave prophet to predict what women will do. Oh, I forgot one point. Will you please ask Thuvia to fetch along those timepieces? I think Hilda and Dee Dee will want to present them at the picnic. Cart, could we meet at the Promontory of Tears in the Bay of Blood? Say at midday tomorrow? Would that timing suit your ladies, do you think?
I see no obstacle. How will your princesses dress? Dagger and belt?
I think they would enjoy a last chance to dress up as ladies of Helium. But would that annoy the Jadara and Thuv?
No, or rather they too must dress up anyhow, for this will be a public occasion, Zeb. I must provide guards. Will your honor be offended if there are flyers overhead?
Meaning I might think they were there to keep me from leaving suddenly?
Oh, you wouldn't be leaving from there. But that's wild country. I must protect Mother and Thu, and Dee Dee and Hilda.
Cart, you know I refused to promise not to leave. I still won't promise. I might leave, very suddenly. So put the whole Helium Navy overhead if you wish. But let's all enjoy a happy time and not worry about the ambassador and his knavish lies. After the picnic is over is soon enough for this nonsense. Let's have a jolly time. Feel better?
Much better. Zeb, you're a strange one. I would never have guessed that you could prophesy.
29. Hilda. I still think our Zebby boy had something to do with that lime jello in my swimming pool. I don't mean he lied to me, Zebby is too smart for that. But if I had tape recordings of every word Zebby has ever said to me about lime jello, then got a trained semanticist, like Dee Dee, only Dee Dee wouldn't do it, to analyze it, I'll bet there would be a loophole you could drive a lorry through. But I don't want to catch Zebby out. He's the perfect skipper for our pirate crew. My Jacob is too candid for the job. He doesn't even have Dee Dee's ability to go deadpan. Zebby got back the night before, told us all that we were going on a picnic, then sent Tira to consult with the executive chef of the palace. He chased our 8 wood nymphs into their rooms, then called a conference. Tete-a-tete-a-tete. Pipe down and listen. Hold all questions. Zebby spoke very quietly for a quarter of an hour. Do you all understand your assignments?
Yes, agreed Dee Dee. But I don't understand why I must...
Dee Dee, lifeboat rules. She looked startled.
Yes, sir.
Zeb, Jacob said, wouldn't it be better to tell... Lifeboat rules for you too. Unless you want to boss the operation. I'm willing. Want the job? Jacob blinked. No, Captain. Aye, aye, sir. I decided not to ask the question that had been niggling at me. Now each repeat back to me your precise instructions. Co-pilot. I am to get word to Mobius Turas, if I can reach him. Precise. Start over. I will find Mobius Turas and invite him to a feast excursion in honor of the Jadara and the Prince Regent. He is expected at the Regent's apartments half a zode, call it 1 hour and 15 minutes, before midday, local noon. I will not tell him how to dress, but will make clear that all our family and all the royal family will be in full formal leathers and decorations. Correct. Hilda? Call me Joe piloted us. I called him Joe. He grinned and saluted. But he was not in command. It was a big flying ship, the flagship, I think, of the Helium Navy. The captain, or maybe the admiral, anyhow the one in front at the gangway when Dej, the Jadara, came aboard and all the bugles sounded. The captain, admiral, was so covered with fancy leather and decorations that I had to look twice to see that he was almost as scarred as Catch. But it wasn't like a warship aboard. It was more like an excursion steamer, gay with banners and with silks and furs and cushions most everywhere. I didn't see anything that I recognized as weapons, except the swords and personal weapons of the swarm of warriors we had with us. But the L-gun in Gay doesn't look like a weapon either. That airship may have been armed to the teeth. I stayed at the gangway while Tira shooed her brood aboard, each with a curtsy to me. Tira, our darlings don't look happy. What's the matter, dear? Didn't you tell them that this is a picnic for fun?
Yes, Princess, but they are frightened. None of us has ever flown before.
Are you scared? She managed a dimple.
Not as frightened as I was, Princess Hilda. I'll be all right.
Sure you will be. So calm them down and have them start serving. We cruised slowly, so slowly that the windscreens protected our hairdos. I understand that our big ship could have reached the Promontory of Tears in only minutes, but we went the long way around, circling both greater and lesser Helium, sightseeing, as we had more than an hour to kill. I sought out Thuv and Dej, seated on big cushions back aft, and got on with my assignment, listened as they pointed out palaces and places of interest, while I worked the talk around to babies. Not difficult, Dej and Thuv both are grandmothers. Of course, they were intensely interested in how we do it. Soon I had them listening with horrified fascination to every grisly delivery room story I had on tap, some that I had actually seen, some that I had simply heard about. But I told all of it as if I myself had been present and embellished the horror, made them more horrid. After one, Dej said,
"Oh, that poor girl, why did they let her suffer so long? Why didn't her surgeons grant her the grace of a quick death?"
"But Dej, darling, she lived through it. Didn't I make that clear? And so did her baby. A fine, healthy young lad now, tall as Zebby's shoulder.
And she had two more babies after that, both healthy and no more than normal pain and blood."
Two lies, and a damned lie in that one. Her OB tied off her tubes. Thuvia shivered.
"I'm glad we lay eggs. Hillbilly, aren't you scared?"
I managed a wan smile.
"All of the women of my race go through this. I will be proud to endure it to give my beloved Jacob an heir." Then I swallowed air on purpose and belched. "Excuse me, a touch of morning sickness." They already knew from me what I meant by that.
"Thuvia, send for our physician."
I put my hand on her arm.
"Dej, I'm all right, and your physician won't know what to do for me. He can't know," I added. "But I'm worried about Didi."
"The Princess Didi is morning sick."
"No, a much graver worry than that. You see..." "No, I must explain. I'm not very muscular, and I'm very limber, and I have good measurements. But Didi is an athlete, as strong as a man, and somewhat muscle-bound by it. And despite her size, her pelvic measurements are less than mine." Two lies in that. Didi is limber as a worm and seems to have been specially designed to have babies.
"So when she goes into labor, her baby could get its skull stuck in her pelvis, and both would die."
Still another lie. While that should not be allowed to happen, it's usually possible to save either the baby or the mother. A horrid choice. "So you can bet everything you own that Sharpie will be standing by, and at the first suggestion of trouble, I'm going to insist on a cesarean at once."
Thuvia said, "But Hilda, didn't you tell me that you two were egg-fertilized at the same time? Won't you be in labor, you called it, at the same time?"
I grudgingly admitted that it could happen, but probably one of us would reach the finish line first, by a day or two. Mild fibs, no flat lies, but useful. "But there is really nothing to worry about. As soon as the Prince Regent permits us to leave, our husbands will take us to the finest obstetricians to be found." Then I looked thoughtfully worried. "But I do hope the Prince Regent will grant permission soon. It should be soon, for Didi's sake." Deja Thoris jumped at the bait.
"What's this about my son not permitting you to leave? What do you mean, dear child? You are not prisoners. You are my guests."
I looked helpless. I can look very helpless when I try.
Oh dear. Jacob always did say I talk too much. Imperial Majesty, forgive me." "Forgive you for what, dear? Explain yourself."
I didn't answer. I just shrank up and made myself still smaller and looked frightened and miserable. I've had that down pat most of my life, though I haven't needed it much the past 20-odd years.
Dej put her arm around me and called out,
"Guard!"
An officer, resplendent, was suddenly in front of her. She spoke to him very rapidly in Barsoomian, and I caught not a word. He saluted and was gone so fast he might as well have jumped overboard. Cart showed up quickly, noticed that I was with his mother, spoke in English. The dear boy is always polite.
"The Jadara commands my presence."
Dej spoke to her son in their own language. Cart was standing as she started in, standing but relaxed. Then he snapped to attention, like a United States Marine on parade, and stayed that way throughout the exchange. Dej spoke softly, her words couldn't have carried very far, and Cart answered the same way. But his face got redder and redder until he was almost purple, while his features never moved. They both did a lot of talking, but Dej interrupted Cart more than once while he never interrupted her. I felt sorry for him. Cart is a truly sweet man. No sense of humor, but men so seldom do. At last, he said two words, ones I had learned from Tira. They translated as three words. At once, Jadara.
Wait, Dej said in English. Tell the Princess Hilda the gist of it. Then find Captain Zebediah John Carter of Virginia. Tell him all of it.
Yes, m'lady mother. Princess Hilda, I purposed telling Zeb this publicly at your picnic, but my mother has ruled otherwise. I summoned to my apartments early this morning the ambassador from Earth, and directed that he bring with him his official copy of the extradition treaty between Helium and Earth. He showed up, but he had no treaty with him. Just some notes, which he said were a summary, claimed that the treaty itself was on Earth. Zeb has told you about this matter. A demand on Helium that we surrender Zeb to him, I mean. Do you know the word extradition?
Certainly, Cart.
It's more than I knew, until yesterday.
Zeb told us the essentials, I think. Silly business, isn't it? Do I look kidnapped?
Dej tightened her arm around me. The Princess Hilda is kidnapped by me at the moment. Thuvia, do you think your pet Banths would enjoy a meal of raw ambassador?
Mama, it might poison them. Bad meat.
Joking, dear daughter. We are not barbarians. An emissary, even from an enemy, is inviolate in his person. But I propose restricting him and all his diplomatic party to his embassy until my grandfather or my husband returns. At which time he will be sent home, I firmly predict. Restricted, save for one appearance before me, tomorrow. Tell her, my son.
Yes, mother. Princess Hilda, I think you know that my authority is merely delegated. I have none of my own. During the absence of the Jeddak, and the Jeddak of Jeddaks, and the Jed of Lesser Helium, all authority is in the person of the Jeddara. But it pleases my mother to have me practice ruling so that I may...
Don't make excuses for me, Carterus. Ruling bores me. I'm lazy, Hilda. I let men do the work.
So do I, Dej, when possible.
When possible. But sometimes it is not. Go on, son.
Yesterday, I found myself in an impossible position. I tried to work it out, and I thought I had, mostly. But now my mother has taken over the problem, by assuming the authority vested in her, to my great relief, I should add.
Skip the comments, Carterus.
Yes, mother. Tomorrow, the ambassador will be summoned by the Jeddara. She will receive him from the throne. I received him in my chambers.
Cart grinned for the first time.
I would not wish to be in his shoes.
I suddenly straightened up. Cart, does he wear shoes, or does he dress as we do?
Dej said,
What does it matter what he wears, Hilda? Not only are the charges against our dear cousin Zebediah ridiculous, but also I know that there was no so-called extradition treaty. Little as I care for the weary business of statecraft, I attended every session with the men of Jassoom when first they came here. It was my husband's wish. My son missed some of them.
We were in Patarth, mother, put in Thuvia. You know why.
My son and Princess Thuvia were representing my husband and me at the capital of our closest ally, Hilda. I was not imputing lack of diligence to Carterus. Hilda, I have heard that treaties on Jassoom are often long and complex. Here, they are not. If a Jeddak's word is not to be trusted, of what use is a long and complex document?
In the agreement by which we permitted Earthling ships to land here, and agreed to their embassy, and to treat Earthling visitors as guests, there was no word about arresting fugitives for them. The idea is foreign to us, and I do not see its usefulness. We have a saying, "The Banths make good judges," meaning that an evildoer cannot escape forever the fate he makes for himself. Not only do I know by my own ears that there was no such agreement, but also, had there been, my husband and my grandfather would have instructed my son before leaving him as regent.
Mother, I thought that must be the case.
Place more faith in your elders, my dear.
Yes, Mother. I did not know that you had attended those conferences. All of them, I mean. I did not wish to trouble you with it. I was troubled enough myself.
Daze reached out, took Hart's hand, pulled his face down to hers, and kissed him.
You have always treated ladies with gallant thoughtfulness, my son. Your father and I are proud of you, but this need trouble you no more. This one bit of statecraft I shall enjoy. I'll sweat him till his collar wilts. Cartorus, see to it that the chamber in which he waits my pleasure is much too warm for clothing. I intend to keep him waiting at least half a zode.
Cart grinned.
Jadara, your wish is my pleasure.
I suddenly blurted out,
Dej, does this creature always wear full earthling dress, long trousers, long sleeves?
Hilda, that's twice you've asked about his mode of dressing. Why, dear?
I had already completed my assigned duties, but Captain Zebby hadn't placed me under lifeboat rules about this. And who was the expert on aliens? The science officer. Me, what a giggle. But I had taken one apart to see what made it tick, and I felt certain that no amount of plastic surgery could make one look human if its arms and legs were bare. Besides, while I'm not the brain Jacob is, or Didi, or even Zebby, I don't need a map to tell me it's raining. If the ambassador from Earth 10 knew things that had happened on Earth 0, that only those weird aliens knew, with the facts mixed up in a fashion they might mix them up to confuse things, then Earth 10 was at least as infested as our own Earth. If it was even worse infested, that ambassador himself might be an alien. At the very least, he was carrying out their dirty work. I found myself telling what I knew about strangely articulated hermaphrodites with hemocyanin, or something like it, instead of hemoglobin. Dej and Thuv listened quietly. No ohs or ahs or I can't believe it. Once Dej glanced up at Cart, he said quietly,
Cousin Zebediah confirms this.
I didn't try to explain higher geometry. I didn't mention it.
That's why we can't go home, and also why our husbands haven't any time to waste in finding us a safe planet.
A safe planet with obstetricians, Dej corrected.
No flies on that, gal. Maybe there's something to this royalty notion, at least on Barsoom.
Yes, our space chariot can go anywhere, but it may take some time to find one. I'm worried about Didi.
I'm worried about both of you, dear Hilda.
Carterus, has anyone ever seen the ambassador dressed as gentleman dress, or does he always wear those strange, ugly garments?
I've never seen him in anything else, bundled up as if he planned to hunt apts on ice.
Dej, the tourists, or most of them at least, are human. I know.
How, dear?
Two tourist ships have grounded while we've been here. The first day a tourist is here, he or she is usually covered up pretty thoroughly. Then they see how comfortable we are. They gradually wear less and less, both men and women in shorts, men in short-sleeved shirts or no shirts at all. Even some of the women, especially the younger ones, start being bare to the waist.
An alien can't possibly get away with that. It couldn't disguise its weirdness.
Prince Regent.
Jadara.
Require their ambassador to present himself before me in formal court harness.
Send leather and sword to him, and be certain that it is ornate to befit his rank. Be very sure that he understands that he cannot enter the throne room improperly attired. Be sure that he realizes that any other costume is a deadly insult to Helium.
Jadara, again, your wish is my great pleasure.
Dej, if he's a Pankera, that thing in the Palace of Memories, if he's the sort of alien, he won't wear it. He'll be taken suddenly ill and have to send a substitute, or something.
Dej patted my shoulder. I realize that, dear Hilda. Carteris, send enough court harnesses for a party of proper protocol. Hilda, we know how many are in their embassy and the ranks of each. If he does send a substitute, we will know by how junior he is the number of aliens there are here. If the ambassador dare not appear himself, we shall see what we shall see.
Dej, you might be in danger. They may have weapons that don't look like weapons.
My son will protect me.
Princess Hilda, the guard will be alert, and the Jadara will not enter the throne room until I personally, as deputy to the warlord, have made sure that each harness carries nothing more deadly than a sword. Not altered, nothing added. And the swordsman who can fight his way to the throne past my guard has yet to be hatched.
We grounded soon after, almost on the spot by the Promontory of Tears, where Tommy Tucker and I had had our unfortunate misunderstanding. Or fortunate, since it had gained us our first friends. Where I had tried to poke out his pretty pop eyes. As we grounded, they charged again, just two of them this time, full speed and yelling, blood-curdling war cries, and came to a skidding stop just short of the flagship, with their lances swept up in perfect salute. I almost didn't recognize our friends. Tommy was looking fierce and military behind his finery, and Catch was so covered with decorations that his scars hardly showed. They were utterly immobile, waiting, I suppose, for some sign from the Jadara. Even their mounts were frozen at attention, which though at seldom are. But Didi doesn't bother with protocol. She called out, "Hi, Kanakuk, dear." And Kanakuk tossed her head and answered with her three-note canary call that she uses only with Didi and Catch, and sometimes me. But she loves Didi and tolerates me simply because I'm Didi's friend. I suppose Dej acknowledged the salute, for our friends wheeled about, trotted away maybe 50 meters, wheeled again and waited, lances couchant. Warriors, sailors, airmen, started rigging out the gangway. I heard Zebby say, "Just a moment, Cart. This isn't where we will picnic. This is just the rendezvous to meet our giant friends."
"Very well, cousin. Where shall I tell the skipper to place the ship?"
Captain Zebby had to be a smarty pants about it. He pointed and said, "If you look off that way, I'll be able to show you in a moment the exact spot where I hid what I told you about." When I heard Zebby say that, I stuffed my ear button into place. I had been wearing my walkie-talkie all along, and it didn't go very well with the load of jewelry I was wearing. But jewels and my ornate harness covered the shoulder strap, and my dagger belt held the little radio against my hip. A diamond and ruby choker covered my throat mic. All I had to do was reach up, pull the button out from under the choker, and stuff it into my ear. Zebby had told us that if we were asked to tell the truth, a portable wireless to talk to each other if we were far enough apart to need them. But no one asked me. Didi had slipped away to the fantail. Everyone else in our party was forward, looking where Zebby was pointing. Cart said, "I don't see anything out there, Zeb." "You'll spot it in a moment. Your air cover may see it first. What is it, the whole Helium Navy? One could almost walk across the sky, stepping from ship to ship."
"Considerably less than half of it, Zeb. I still don't see anything."
"You'll spot it. Just about now." I glanced back at Dee Dee. She had her face turned away from everyone.
Hello, Gay.
Hi, Dee Dee.
Gay Deceiver, bug out.
I turned my head quickly, just as everyone but us gasped. There, over a kilometer away, beautiful and sleek and shiny, was the fifth member of our family, Gay Deceiver, in person. I was back of the crowd where I could see Dee Dee, and thus not too close to Jacob and Captain Zebby and the royal family, and Mobius Taras and the Captain Admiral. But the range was so short that I could pick up every word almost too loud via Jacob's and Zebby's throat mics. Kart said very slowly, "Interesting. Very interesting. How, Zeb?" "I told you I could pilot it out of that hole without help. You'll find it still more interesting when you have built your own. It is necessary to warn your air cover not to attack?" "No, but I'll do so, to set your mind at rest." Kart called out something in Barsoomian, much too loudly. It hurt my ear. Someone answered with two words that meant, "At once, Highness." I could see why Zebby had asked. Flyers were diving on Gay. They always straightened out without touching her, but some came mighty close. Kart said something to Mobius Taras. All I caught was his name. The old man answered in a high, excited voice. Kart said, "Mobius Taras says that he must refrain from comment until he has had time to study this." "Mobius Taras is a wise man, Kart. It took Jake time to teach me the little I know about it. Wouldn't it be well to send word back to the palace? I suspect that your officer of the guard is having fits."
"Should have thought of that myself."
Kart gave another order. "Zeb, how about trading jobs with me?" Zeb laughed at him.
"And take on your headaches? Go lay an egg."
Said in Barsoomian, I know the phrase, but Zebby said it in English, this is a very rude remark for one man to make to another. Of course, most of the ones there knew no English, but Thuv guffawed, then suppressed it. Dej pretended not to notice. Kart said sadly,
"I knew you would say that, you ape's offspring."
"Cousin Zebediah, may we go closer?"
"Certainly, Cousin Dejathoris, if you will tell your captain, as close as you wish. Would you like to take a ride in our sky chariot?"
"What a tempting offer. Carterus?" "Your Imperial Majesty, as deputy for my father, the warlord, I am forced to advise against it."
"I suppose you must. Oh dear."
"But mother, if I were you, I would tell my son to go ride a banth and do exactly as I pleased."
"You're as naughty as your father. Now I'll have to decide for myself. Oh dear. Men."
30. Zebediah. Not since the year with the Aussies have I had so much fun. That picnic was a luau. The bug-out pre-program worked like magic and made me head magician. I had not been sure it would work until it did. An earlier test, same range but in another direction, showed that it was extreme range for Gay to receive orders by walkie-talkie, borderline of failure. If it did fail, so many things can go wrong, the only backup I had was to whop up some lie to get one of us into the air as a passenger on one of their flyers, then go halfway to helium if necessary until signal was strong enough. Fishy. But variables that affect radio reception hit the jackpot for me. When Gay's signal read loud and clear, "Hi, Dee Dee," I re-swallowed my stomach. A second later, at bug out, I resumed breathing. There she lay, instantaneously shining bright. I couldn't have done it so spectacularly without the sorcerer's apprentice, my gal Dee Dee. While everyone else was forward and I kept up a running chatter while pointing the general direction, Dee Dee went aft. I hadn't dared get any closer than this promontory. Gay knew exactly where she had been parked, but I didn't, not within 200 meters. Make that 300. I had never dreamed that 20-odd ships would pick her up and move her, like Lilliputians move Gulliver. The best I could do was to make rendezvous at my only landmark, well back from where we had once been parked, search that field to make sure there was nothing in it, not even a wild animal, while pointing at nothing and urging everybody to spot what I was not pointing at. When Dee Dee's voice in my earbuds said quietly, "Okay," I tacked her execute signal onto the end of a sentence, "Now." How many gals or males could have refrained from claiming some of the applause? I didn't caution Dee Dee not boast about her role, warn her not to kill the magic by explaining it. That was not in her lifeboat instructions. She was free to boast if she wished. Not Dee Dee. She mingled with the crowd while everyone was still staring. When I glanced at her, the button was no longer in her ear. I noticed later that Hilda had tucked hers away, too. A walkie-talkie can fail. Hilda was first backup if Dee Dee's picked that moment to quit. Jake was nominal second backup. He can be absent-minded. And I was last, if utterly necessary. But I wanted simply to point and have it happen, and while Gay will accept any program from any of us four, if worded correctly and clearly enunciated, I wanted Dee Dee to give this order because her voice had been used to pre-program. This might help if signal were faint and noise level high. It turned out that all my worrying and fallback positions weren't needed. But damn it, if you don't worry ahead of time, you'll regret it later. So it stayed magic. Except to Mobius Taras. That old boy fooled me by doing a full flip-flop. Opsomathic ability, the capacity to grasp new ideas in old age, varies from individual to individual. Some minds freeze solid at 18, never have a new thought. Some geniuses remain creative almost till death. For example, Paul Dirac, Leonardo da Vinci. But most scientists do their best work before 35, and Earth humans capable of grasping a completely new concept after 50 are exceptional. Mobius Taras was almost 1,000 years old and reputed to be their greatest mathematician. Jake had found him decidedly set in his opinions, apparently with good reason, and I had warned Jake against offering engineering demonstrations to Mobius Taras, as I believed the old man would brush it off as trickery. But Mobius Taras was an even greater genius than I had thought. He had seen a miracle, and at once made the difficult jump from his firm opinion of abstract mathematics with no relation to the real world to this is engineering based on that mathematics, no other explanation covers the facts, I was wrong, made this intellectual jump almost as quickly as Gay Deceiver had made her instantaneous jump from palace to Bay of Blood. Most surprising of all, he bore no resentment. He was delighted and wanted to know how, the nuts and bolts of it, please, how is this mathematics applied in practice? He was already discussing it with Jake in that mishmash of English, Barsoomian, and mathematics that they used as pigeon talk while others were still staring. They went on jabbering while the fleet admiral, near enough, their ranks don't match ours, had the ship lifted and moved to a grounding a few meters from Gay Deceiver. They still talked while our picnic was set up. We almost had to drag them to lunch. There were two picnics, our family party under the spread starboard wing of Gay, and a larger party of warriors and officers about 50 meters away. Hilda and Dee Dee, as hostesses, played hob with helium protocol. Our table, a long silk placed on the ground and surrounded by cushions, had our own four, the royal family, Mobius Taras, Fleet Admiral Hal Halsa, Hilda invited him with Deja Thoris translating, Call me Joe. Dee Dee simply took him by the hand, led him over. Tom Takas, Catch Catch Can, and Tira. Tira did her utmost to refuse without flatly disobeying until a word from Deja Thoris caused her to curtsy, then sit down and behave as if eating with royalty in public were something she had done all her life. Larlo took over as straw boss. Call Me Joe Jovial was possibly more embarrassed, even after Cart said something which I guessed at as being, "Lieutenant, do as your hostess wishes." He sat down, but was still stiff until the fleet admiral spoke to him. Again, I did not ask for translation. I didn't need to. It was something equivalent to, "Relax, son, and smile. You're putting a damper on the party." Tom Tawkis seemed ill at ease only at first. Catch-Catch-Can did not. If the Lords of Creation wanted him to eat with them, the old sergeant accepted it. "How do you arrange 2 green giants and 11 others when 3 don't speak English and 4 don't speak the local language, and 2 giants, reclining, would use up all of one side of your table?" Hilda's solution? Ignore protocol, both that of Helium and of Earth. Cluster those who want to talk about mathematics, gay deceiver, military, and economic potentials there too, Jake, Cart, Mobius, the Admiral, together. Put the giants diagonally off the corners. Place those who would rather talk babies together. Make sure that the 3 who lacked English were placed with at least 1 who spoke both languages. This worked out so that Tira had Call Me Joe on her right and the Admiral on her left, and neither man seemed displeased. And I suddenly realized Tira looked better dressed in her graceful self than did any of our ladies in their excessively lavish jewelry. Even the incomparable Deja Thoris. I noticed because Call Me Joe was getting cross-eyed through trying to give all attention to his Jadara on his right while staring at Jadara's slave on his left. Then I saw that the Admiral was all ears to the discussion of mathematics and engineering, with Cart translating for him, but managing to look at Tira by cupping 1 ear to the technical talk and thereby half turning his head to his right, at Tira. I deduced a minor truth. Gems make fine accents for female beauty, but only as accents. Beauty is fundamental. Better no jewelry than to deck a lovely woman like a Christmas tree. The party milled around some. Thuvia was called by Cart to help explain some point to the Admiral that both Jake and Mobius took as obvious, but the Admiral wanted clarified. I knew how he felt. Applied relativistic ballistics is about my limit. And now Jake comes along and kicks the tar out of relativism while retaining curved space. Wogi and Ajal were dead set on getting me drunk. I hollered for help to Tira, asking whether or not we had fetched anything non-alcoholic, even water. Tira looked as surprised as she ever does, not very, whereupon she called Larlo to her, and from then on the pixies let me have fruit juices. I drank juice and got food into me, then got up and took care of a couple of errands. I went inside my car, got at my gold, took 8 1929 half-eagles and 1 1926 eagle, worth quite a lot as collector's items on Earth Zero, but nothing but bullion to me since I planned never to go back there. Figured by mass as tanpi they were suitable tips, but I thought our girls would rather have pretty coins than the same mass as plain bullion. I put them into my belt pouch. I counted out a pre-calculated number of coins, figuring them as bullion, tied them into a handkerchief, went outside, got Thuvia's ear, said quietly, "I have a package for you. Do you have one for me?"
"2,
she answered, just as quietly. "Both the same, or do I deliver 1 to Didi, 1 to Hilda?"
"Exactly alike."
We made the exchange unobtrusively, although by then almost anything would be unobtrusive. It was beginning to resemble one of Sharpie's parties on Earth Zero. I slipped 1 package to Hilda. It disappeared. I took the other around to Didi, who had shifted around to the Jadara's place when Dej had moved down to hear something the Admiral was saying about military potential of the Burrows drive, I guess. It wasn't English. Didi was sitting on Catch's chest, dropping food into his mouth and talking to Call Me Joe through Tira. I slipped her the package. She slid it somewhere into that ornate harness without breaking her chatter. I said to Catch in a low voice, "The baggage items, which Thoat, or both?"
cannot cook, he answered even more quietly. Shall I call her here, or does the captain wish to?
Didi jumped up. I'll call her. Can a cook? Come here, dear.
I swore silently. The Thoats were grazing off the port side of the car, away from both picnics, I having asked their owners to tell them to stay there. But my silent swearing was not at Didi, it was my goof. I had neglected to tell her what I had in mind. The Thoat answered at once, her three-note squeal very loud, and around the tail of my car came this misshapen mastodon at flank speed. As she skidded to a stop, her ferocious face 10 centimeters from Didi's face, what had been the larger picnic 50 meters away was now a line of warriors charging pell-mell to save the royal family. I figure it was the fact that the Princess Didi had her arms around as much of the Thoat's head as she could stretch saved Kanakuk's life that day. At least half of those warriors had drawn pistols rather than swords. Kart snapped something at the admiral. He let out a bellow that bounced off that charge. It suddenly halted. He added another order, not quite so loudly. They returned to their rather trampled feast. Didi looked around, still petting Kanakuk.
What's the trouble? Hey, Kart, what's going on?
Nothing, princess. Everything's all right.
When did I stop being Didi to you? Why were those men running? Don't fib to me, Kart. No, I missed something.
Didi, everything's all right now. It's just that my guardsmen aren't used to seeing a Thoat charging at their Jadara.
But she wasn't charging at anybody. She just came to me when I called her. Kanakuk wouldn't hurt anyone. She's gentle as a lamb, as a Sorak.
Kanakuk answered her name again.
Dej, come meet my friend.
The Jadara at once stood up. Kart said hastily,
Mother, do be cautious.
You be cautious, Kartoris.
The Jadara went straight to my wife. Catch-Catch-Can stepped closer to the Thoat, placed his hand on her neck.
Dej, this is my friend Kanakuk. She's sweet and gentle. Kanakuk, greet your Jadara, Deja Thoris.
The Thoat sounded her bird call, then added to it a longer flourish. Didi clapped.
Why, she said hello to you. That's how she says it. She likes you, Dej. I said cower directly to her mind, dear. She is indeed a sweet creature. Catch-Catch-Can, you are fortunate.
Your Imperial Majesty, I have long thought so. Thank you.
Kart came up, followed by Thuvia and the Admiral. They all discussed Thoats we have known, with Thuvia and Dej translating for Didi and for the Admiral. I waited, then looked up at Catch, his face 3 meters higher than mine.
Catch, where is the stuff? I asked, trying to make it a stage whisper. In my rifle boot, and in the bag behind it. I'll get it, sir, but I had best stay here now.
Should have kept my mouth shut. I couldn't reach either one without a ladder, and Kanakuk was rocking just a touch, no doubt made nervous by too many strangers. Eventually they stopped and all went back to the table. Catch got out what he had carried for us, a silk-wrapped package containing 2 pairs of laundered boxer shorts, 2 laundered scarves, a smaller included package of jewelry, both real and costume, and a separate package containing shotgun shells, a loaded clip for an automatic, and ammo for my revolver. Jake and I were wearing firearms but decided against wearing them loaded. Someone might want to look at strange firearms, and it might be impolite to refuse. Catch then removed his big rifle from its boot scabbard, reached far down with his upper right arm, hauled out Didi's shotgun. He insisted on carrying everything for me. Well, he had 4 hands. Feeling foolish, I walked with him to Gay Deceiver's starboard door, placed the gear inside. If I had had the foresight to tell Didi my intention, the stuff would have been loaded in from the port side, out of sight of guests. I returned to the picnic, accepted more fruit juice from Wogi while dreaming of a dry martini. A few minutes later, Kart moved over and joined me. You are leaving today, he said quietly. Yes. No criticism. I realized it before you loaded your baggage. Let me know when you want the air cover pulled back. Cart, you saw how I moved our chariot here. Was your air cover on station? Did I tear a hole in your palace? He got a wry look. Perhaps I don't yet believe it in my belly. I know. I went through that stage. We'll miss you. He was silent a moment, then added, I noticed the transaction with Thuv. Zeb, it wasn't necessary to tell me you had buried your gold out here. The picnic would have been held anyhow. Cart, I never said I had buried the gold out here. I said that I had left it out here. You took it to the palace, not me. I added, when you groused that it wasn't safe, I told you that it was quite safe, and it was. You had a triple guard around it. I did not lie to you, but I had to get our space chariot out here, and you were trying to stop me. I wasn't going to beg you to let me move my own property, not when your sole reason was a bunch of trumped-up charges. I know that you felt duty-bound to hold us here, to hold us in Helium, I mean. But if I understood you a few days ago, this wasteland is not Helium, and we are neither a green horde, not allied to you, nor an unfriendly army. No, but I could still stop you, and would if duty required. Could you, Cart? Are you certain that all your flyers overhead are as powerful as this one chariot? I offered you a harmless demonstration. Do you insist on a more convincing one? It would give me no pleasure to destroy even one of your ships, and I certainly would not wish to kill those warriors behind us. I know your ship is armored, Zeb, but you aren't in it. I raised my voice just enough to be sure that the skin mic over the starboard door would pick it up. Gay Deceiver, open up. The doors swung wide. I added, Gay Deceiver, close up. She closed again. Anything more you want to see, Cart? I noticed that Hal Halsa was startled, but perhaps you noticed that Hilda was not. Cart, are you still bound by duty? You made every reasonable effort to hold me in Helium in answer to that phony extradition, but I am bound by duty too, to protect my wife, to protect Hilda. I tried to make it easy for you by coming here, outside Helium, but we could have left last night, and nothing could have stopped us. I told you that guards did not matter. Nor do these guards matter. How much proof does it take? I thought he was changing the subject. Milady Mother really chewed me out today. I have no further duty in the matter, as you know. You are free to leave any time, as I also told you. Yes, you told me. I was most happy to learn that we could leave freely. We would have left without permission, but it would have sorrowed us to be forced to do it that way. That's why I waited and gave you an easy way out. But I'm glad that the Jadara knew that there was no duty involved over that silly extradition scroll. If you had still felt yourself bound by it, we would have left 3 hours ago, without bloodshed. We still can, even if your lady mother were to change her mind and order us held. Huh. It was more than a laugh. Mother does not change her mind. You still seem to be wrestling with your soul rather than thinking with your brain. I've asked you the same question again and again. You haven't answered. Do you think that all the power of Helium can hold us? Those weird aliens tried to stop us with far stronger weapons. They failed. I would happily have killed them all. But they were disguised, too well hidden among our own people. Had we fought, many of our people would have died, so we fled, four innocent people in a private chariot. Someday we will find some way to dig them out, tear off their disguises. If we do, no, when we do, I hammered the ground with clenched fist, we'll kill them all. I wish you luck, blood brother. When the time comes, my sword fights with yours. I know it, Cart. We'll kill as many as possible personally, you and I. Kart, these aren't honorable enemies, they are vermin. Intelligent and dangerous, but vermin, to be killed on sight. I added, you aren't safe. Helium is not safe from them. We figured that out, or Hilda did. Tomorrow we will know more. Take no chances with them. Does helium require health inspection? Eh? Incoming strangers. We were cleared without inspection. What inspections are routine? Why, freight inspections are made at the gates. Certain imports are not permitted. Others may be taxed, or may not, it varies. Each stranger must identify himself. He smiled. Sometimes we make mistakes, but not for long. No. I explained to him the idea of health inspection at immigration. Each nation has its own law on this. Not even diplomatic immunity can exempt a newcomer from whatever health inspection that nation finds necessary to protect the health of its citizens. You can require them to strip naked, but simply examining arms and legs would unmask these vermin, I think. Let me call our expert. Hilda, can you spare a moment? We were ready to leave when a hitch developed. Presents had been made. Fancy watches to Catch and to Tommy Tucker, gold pieces to our borrowed domestic staff, and to Kart, from Hilda, three spares of her record shots, stereo Polaroid, of the corpse of that fake ranger. How it had looked in uniform, stretched out dead on a workbench, how it had looked naked with extra joints and stub horns showing, and a stomach-retching view of it opened, greenish-blue blood everywhere. She showed these with a portable viewer. Kart asked her to show them to Hal Halsa and to Mobius Taras. Did not want his mother and his wife to look at them. One word from the Jadara changed his mind. Dej looked at all three, long and carefully, and, so far as her face showed, no emotion. Thuv looked at the first with interest, the second with fascination, the third with horrified disgust. But she examined them as carefully as her mother-in-law. Hilda told Kart that she was sorry that there was no spare viewer. He asked, may I see it a moment? Looked at it again, called Hal Halsa and Mobius Taras into conference. Kart handed it back. We'll have one later tonight. Mobius Taras asked me to tell you that the vermin pictured is beyond doubt a Pancera, of the Pankey that once invaded Barsoom. Hal Halsa adds that we shall kill them again, to the last monster. Good. Gentle little Hilda is bloodthirsty, when blood has the wrong color. I was forced to add, tell him not to be overconfident, Kart. Swords aren't much use against these things. You did well with a sword, blood brother. That was a nice belly thrust, I could see. But Kart, they operate by stealth in hiding, and now they have weapons that can destroy whole cities. I didn't know that Earth 10 had H-bombs, N-bombs, etc., but I knew that the vermin on Earth 0 were in cahoots with vermin on Earth 10. Proof? That phony extradition.
Cousin Zebediah?
Cousin Deja Thoris?
Any that are here now will be unmasked and destroyed. Any that come here will be destroyed at once. I have spoken.
Jadara, don't underrate the enemy. They are powerful. I have spoken.
Captain, your words will be taken most seriously.
Didi had kissed goodbye 19 people and one Thoat. I had kissed 11 myself, clapped shoulders and shaken hands with men, and petted Kanakuk, when a hitch developed. Hal Halsa, Mobius Taras, Kart, Thuv, and Dej all wanted a ride in our sky carriage. Jake had already promised a ride to Mobius Taras. But we have seats for only four. I know, Zeb, but Hilda and Didi are willing to wait while lifeboat rules, co-pilot. Our party will not be separated. But pipe down. Remember Murphy's Law?
Aye, aye, Captain.
Hilda came up with a solution.
Captain, I don't know why you installed safety belts in those sleeping spaces back behind
Murphy's Law. One of us might be hurt or ill.
But now we can use them. Dee Dee and I can ride back there. I don't want to be separated from Jacob. I agreed just because they've been so nice to us.
That solved everything but whom. The Jadara forbade the heir apparent to risk it. Cart, speaking for his father, forbade his mother to risk it. I welcomed the head-on collision. I didn't want to be responsible for either Jadara or heir apparent, and neither would Budge. But Cart appealed to me.
Zeb, please explain to Mother that I need to know the military possibilities of this type of craft.
I may be a fool, but not an idiot. I'd rather argue with a cop than be drawn into a family argument. My brain whizzed. Cart, speak frankly. Which of you, you or Hal Halsa, is more skilled in strategy and tactics? I'm not speaking of skill as a warrior. You are probably second only to your father in that. I mean skilled in art of warfare.
Damn it, Zeb, that's most unfair. Hal Halsa puts his whole time on it. He's chief of staff and deputy to Tars Tarkas. But I have to spend my time on the grimy details of government. If I had the time, you've answered me. Now go give your mother your frank opinion.
Oh, go lay an egg. He stormed off, told his mother that Hal Halsa should go. Still a problem. Hal Halsa knew no English. Mobius Taras and Jake could talk that horrible pigeon, but my co-pilot must not be distracted, or I would cancel the ride. I ordered Jake on that point, and got Dej to give Mobius Taras the same order. Explained to him that I would not allow him to board unless he gave his word of honor not to speak to captain and co-pilot once we were aboard.
He understands it, Cousin Zebediah. He did not like the order, but the supreme authority of a ship's commander underway is the same with us as it seems to be with you. The learned one is a man of honor. He will speak only with Hal Halsa.
But that left us with no interpreter, even a half-arsed one such as Jake. No skin off my nose, but it could be inconvenient.
I'm glad I'm not royal. They operate by different rules.
The Jadara and the prince had stymied each other. Neither could leave the ground. Thuvia herself could not inherit the throne. She was a princess of Ptarth. She was princess consort to the prince and might be Jadara someday, if and when Kart became Jeddak. Her daughter, Terra, Jadara of Gathol, was hatched Princess of Helium and thus was in the direct line of succession. If her older brother, her father, her mother's grandfather and great-grandfather, and her grandmother, Deja Thoris, hatched Princess of Helium, were all dead. Unlikely. But Thuvia was not in the line of succession in Helium. Her prime duty as consort was to provide fertilized eggs, potential heirs. This she had done. Thuvia was expendable. Logical? The wild logic of Alice in Wonderland. Space. Those back seats weren't narrow, never had been. It was fore and aft space that had made them inaccessible to me until I refitted Gay Deceiver at the palace. Thuv, everybody straps down, including me. Everybody, or we don't lift off. Only two sets of straps in the back seat. The belts are long enough, but would you rather cuddle up to Hal Halsa or to Mobius Taras? Has to be one or the other. She wrinkled her nose like Dee Dee and grinned.
I suspect that Hal Halsa would be a better cuddle, but it would embarrass the poor man. He can't forget who I am.
Neither could I, and I don't mean princess, she giggled.
Thank you, Zeb. It's mutual. Mobius is so old and skinny his bones will probably cut me, but he and I together won't take up much more space than Hal Halsa. And, as you may have noticed, our great savant is not impressed by royalty. And he is so old that he would, as leaf, cuddle a thoat as me.
I hope I never get that old.
You won't, Zeb. Like my father, like my husband, you will die fighting.
I changed the subject to camera, explained Jake's stereo Polaroid to her. Got it? Practically everything automatic. Don't touch the focus. I'll leave it locked on infinity.
It's loaded. All you have to do is to point it and push the button whenever I yell, picture. But only then. Film is scarce and I can't get more.
These pictures, Hal Halsa and Cart will need to prove to the warlord how useful craft like Gay Deceiver can be. The strap goes around your neck, but at all times, hold the camera firmly by at least one hand.
One minor bobble. Hal Halsa was indignant at the idea of removing his sword. Cart intervened.
Zeb, you can't expect a gentleman to give up his sword.
No room for it, Cart. Jake and I are about to stow our swords and pistols. I want him to remove all that dress junk he's wearing, too. We can't have anything that might get loose in the cabin and bounce around. You too, Thuv. Leave your pretties behind. Didi, Hilda, time to stow all your jewelry.
Thuv made no fuss. She summoned Larlo and quickly was only in dagger and belt.
That too, Thuv. Her eyes widened, but she unbuckled it, handed it to Larlo. I added, Didi has a spare coverall, a flying suit, if you want it.
Will I be cold without it? Not at all, Thuv,
Didi called out. She was standing in the door of the car, naked as an oyster on the half-shell, and as untroubled by it as Tira. I said, Astro Gator, you and the science officer get back in there and strap down. We're wasting time. I turned back to the others. Suit yourself, Thuv. Cart, Hal Halsa need not remove his sword.
Good.
But if he won't, he doesn't go. I obeyed his regulations and his ship. I expect obedience to my orders and my regulations in my ship. He can wear plain leather and one closed pouch, nothing else, or he stays behind. I regret that I have no way to stow his weapons securely. But don't tell him that. Tell him what else I said and don't soften it. No apologies, no explanations. I run a taut ship and require instant, unquestioning obedience. Tell him so.
Cart must have let him have it straight. He was brief. The old warrior straightened himself to full attention, barked one phrase I recognized. It was equivalent to aye aye, sir, or Roger Wilco. He then barked a longer phrase toward his guardsman. An officer answered and a soldier came running over. In 20 seconds, Hal Halsa was wearing plain leather. No weapons. Mobius Taras didn't give a hoot. He was simply impatient to go. His leather was plain anyhow, and he wore nothing but a short sword. He unbuckled it and put it on the ground. Cart picked it up, said something, promised to care for it, I suppose.
One last instruction, Cart. Surround this ship with your guard. Nothing and no one is to go inside that ring of soldiers until return. That means you and the Jadara. No exceptions, no excuses, not even for one instant. I saw a Sorak aboard your flagship. It should be locked up. Cart, if you value the life of your wife, you will do this exactly.
It will be done.
May I ask why?
It would cause a tremendous explosion. I can't take time to explain why, but it would kill everyone in my chariot, destroy the chariot, and kill or badly wound anyone nearby. But if nothing enters that locus, I'll deliver your princess back to you safe and sound.
Or I'll be dead too, pal. But let's not talk about that.
Nothing will enter it. I have spoken.
All hands man the ship. Thuvia, get your charges inside.
Zeb,
Cart's voice sounded plaintive.
Yeah, Cart, I'm busy. Better get your guard in place.
I will at once. But how did you summon your ship?
Oh, I didn't. Didi did.
Didi? But she was with us.
Station your guard, man. I'll give it to you in 10 words just before I close the doors and leave.
I went around to the port side, found Jake waiting, saw that while Hal Halsa had figured out the safety belts, Thuv was having heavy weather getting the old man and herself adjusted. They were strapped in, but the diagonal belt was across her left breast. Obviously uncomfortable. Could be painful if I had to wrestle Gay. I worked at readjusting it, felt a touch on my arm. Hal Halsa had removed one shoulder strap from borrowed harness, was offering it.
Tell him thank you, Thuv. We can use it. And Thuv, once those doors are closed, you are no longer a princess. You are the lowest-ranking crew member, in charge of passengers and photography.
Yes, Captain.
You forgot to stick out your tongue, dear.
Like Dee Dee?
She giggled and stuck out her tongue at me. That's just like Dee Dee. She obeys me when she must, but she reminds me that things will be different later. And so they will be. When those doors open, you'll be a princess again.
I think I like being a crew member. Being a princess can be dull.
Less chatter, please. I got them comfortable. Mobius Taras with an arm around Thuv, and she with both hands free for photography. I checked Hal Halsa, found that his waist strap was too tight. I loosened it until it was firm but safe, got into my own seat, started strapping down. Shoes? Hadn't worn them lately. They were stowed, but my feet were cold. Co-pilot, where are your specs?
Hey, Captain, I haven't worn them lately.
He opened the glove compartment, got out his bifocals case.
I don't think I need them.
Check and see. If you don't read those verniers correctly, we can all be mighty sorry. Or worse.
Yes, Captain. I see better without them. Dear me.
So, re-stow them, but keep them handy. I saw that Cart had the guard positioned. Oh, Cart, here a moment, please. I added, all hands check all around you for loose gear of any sort. Astro Gator, get out 5 bonine pills, 1 for science officer, 3 for Thuv and passengers, 1 for co-pilot. Thuv, these pills are to be chewed and swallowed. No argument permitted, or that passenger gets out. Would have done it earlier if Hal Halsa hadn't yacked. Hi, Cart. Stick your head in. Hello, Gay.
Zeb, dear. I've missed you, darling.
Hilda had put her best bedroom tones into that one, but why did that darn thing have to pop up now? Could the gals have rigged it on me? No, impossible. Or was it? I ignored it. That's how Dee Dee summoned the ship, Cart. He looked startled. You have a woman hidden in there? An automatic pilot, different from the sort you use. Go back and study the copies of the manual I left with you. Machinery Cart, remotely controlled by wireless. Dee Dee was waiting back aft and wearing a wireless concealed in her ornaments. When I signaled Dee Dee, I did with one word, intended not to be noticed. When I said, now, Dee Dee ordered this sky chariot to move to this spot. Think about it. Your technologists can do the same, if they study it. Useful for killing aliens, or other enemies. Thuv, make sure that both passengers get full translations. Cart, if you're ready, get back of your guard line and stay there. We're leaving. Cart muttered, wireless, and trotted toward his encircling warriors. Gay Deceiver, close your doors. All hands report safety belts fastened and pills chewed and swallowed. Science officer,
strapped down, Captain Zebby, and I took my medicine.
Astro Gator,
strapped down, Captain. I wasn't told to take one.
Photographic officer, report passengers and self.
Captain, you checked our straps. We haven't changed them. All three of us chewed and swallowed our pills. Hal Halsa says they taste good. I think so, too, and asks what they are for.
They prevent sickness from motions and flying.
I told him I thought that might be it. He and I don't need them. Perhaps Mobius Taras does.
I couldn't be sure. They're harmless. No more unnecessary chatter to Captain or co-pilot. You may talk with anyone else. Co-pilot, report.
Belts fastened, door seal checked, Captain.
I handed Jake a schedule I had been writing while we ran through the checklist. Read this. Any questions must not use words that might trigger automatic pilot.
Then post it above verniers.
I checked the port side door seal. Left door sealed, check off complete. Photography officer, be ready to photograph on command. Jake said,
the schedule is clear, Captain. It is more than I expected.
Might as well go the scenic route, Jake. Any questions?
Do I do numbers 3 and 5?
No,
I give the oral ones. Corrections. If I am disabled or you see danger, order number 5 without hesitation, and be sure that you are set up to do number 4 before I order number 3, but don't execute number 4 until I order it, unless you spot danger, in which case order number 5 at once. Understood?
Follow routine except to escape danger, Captain.
Set first transition and report ready.
H-axis upward, 50 times minimum transition, or 500 kilometers. Set. Ready.
Execute. I ignored the gasps. Sunlight to starry sky does that. Thuvia, you'll shoot, photograph between our heads when I order it. I was tilting my baby's nose down by her space controls. The planet under us swung into view, more gasps, and I aimed her nose down to helium, easy to spot and beautiful. Picture.
I think I got it. I hope I got it.
Her voice trembled. You probably did. Have Hal Halsa hold it by the edges. Tell him to watch for pictures to appear. I was leveling off. Ready, co-pilot?
H-axis, upward, 1,000 minimum, or 3 by vernier. 10,000 kilometers, set. Ready?
Execute. I turned her nose down again. The whole planet swung.